Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here, as always, here on Driven to Business. We try to make the program informative and fun at the same time. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on the eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes and a few other places that I'm always finding out about. Plus, you can follow us on Twitter at Eddie Mayfield and check us out there. Our guest today is Dharmesh Vohra. Dharmesh, I'm going to get you to pronounce the name of your company because I always say it wrong. It's not MedTech. It's Med with an H. Tech.
Yes, Eddie. Hey, good morning, guys. This is Dharmesh Vohra. And Eddie, I think I pronounce my name as MedTech. So it's MedTech.
And that's MedTech.com if you want to go there and check him out. By the way, Dharmesh, we will have links to Dharmesh's company on eddiemayfield.com. Just go there, hit blog, and you'll see a blurb about Dharmesh, and you can find his company there. Dharmesh, welcome to the program. Dharmesh is an expert. He's a founder of his company, and they do a lot of software consulting for a number of companies, large and small. They also write software. And Dharmesh, and I will also say as full disclosure, Dharmesh is actually doing some enterprise software for us at EMA right now, and Dharmesh has been a friend of our families for many, many years, and we're glad to be associated with him. Hey, Dharmesh, the big buzzword these days, as you know, is the cloud. In fact, I was listening to a radio program on the way in here about the cloud and who's sort of the big players in that and who's not. But just from your perspective, tell us about the cloud.
Eddie, so again, I appreciate, first and foremost, I appreciate you having me on here and giving me a chance to talk about technology and talk about a little bit what I do and my company does. So on the cloud side, cloud is basically, it's a computing which by definition refers to you the delivery of IT services or resources, what I call on demand. So right. Basically what I mean by IT resources out here is you actually acquire and use your IT resources like hardware, operating system, even your business applications on demand. So most of the time I get people a little bit confused on cloud means hosting. It's truly not hosting. Hosting and virtualization is a part of cloud, but I really want to make sure cloud is more than that. Cloud is when you access your IT resource on demand, that's truly a cloud computing. And the best part about this, and I want to reiterate and refocus on the demand, is as your needs grows or shrunk, your IT demand, your cloud demands can grow and shrunk with it, you know? So that's the best situation for any small business to adapt to their IT needs.
I've been kind of doing a little reading up on this course, obviously, since we're in a process of moving our processes to the cloud, and so I've sort of been through this mental exercise I think probably any small business owner goes through. You know, one of the problems that people like me run into is that, as you know, we're EMA is a technical company. We're not unfamiliar with technology. We're fine with it. However, we are a very specific technology company in that we deal with power electronics and automation systems that run industrial plants and things of that sort. We are not at all into running someone's network or their accounting software or their job tracking software and things like that, which is the area that you do specialize in. But, you know, one of the things that we sort of have over the years thought about is that, you know, while the cloud does cost some money, you're moving much of your IT resources, you say you're moving them off your premises and you're accessing them by demand. And I think part of it, at least, Dharmesh, what we had to go through, we were thinking, well, that's too expensive. But when we began to look at it, it actually cost us a fair amount to have that in-house. In that, number one, we don't have the expertise to maintain it. So anything that goes wrong, we either pay somebody to come in and take care of it, or it takes us a long time to get even a small problem resolved. Plus, you've got backup problems. Plus, we're constantly having to buy new computers and all that sort of stuff. I'm assuming you see that with that sort of a mental argument going with almost any small business that you talk to about this, don't you?
Exactly, Eddie. And I think, you hit the nail on the head on this one. Is from cloud perspective, people are most of the small business. They usually have most of their IT environment hosted within their premises. They don't even have, as you just said, they don't even have people who can come by and just look at it if things goes wrong. They are not even technical savvy. They don't have a knowledge to keep that up and running. And one of the major driving force behind this, as I said, is just not demand, but as what you just brought it up, it's the skills required to manage your business up and running. Most of my businesses have to focus on what they do best,
right,
not really worrying about their hardware, their application to keep up with it, the patches that goes along with it. So I think from that perspective, cloud is a better approach. And again, from I know it's a buzzword all the day, it's buzzword nowadays, but have to be really careful with expectation, what and how you're going to, you should have a solid plan putting on there, on anything on your cloud. But from a small business to any big business, the major advantage financially, Eddie, what I feel is they actually take their CapEx budget and put it into an operating budget. So if you don't mind, I can hit on a little bit on that and want to make sure people understand what I just meant by that.
Yeah, I do want to do. Let's go ahead and do that. We have a little bit of time right now. Let's do that. Explain
okay.
that.
Okay. So, usually when you start up your business or when you have a business and you are looking to implement a new software, one of the thing you or new application, you have to think about getting a hardware. You have to get about thinking of getting the licensing for that software. So all that is an upfront cost. So what cloud actually does, you don't have to pay an upfront cost.
Right.
You actually take resources, and as I just said earlier, it's on demand. So you install that software, or you use that software. Install is not the right word, but you use that
right.
software based on your demand, and then you pay as you go. So that actually takes a burden off of your CapEx and put it into a operating budget. So where people have a tight budget, I would always prefer, hey, I would pay as I go kind of a mechanism.
Hey, Dharmesh, this is a bit of this is off topic just a little bit, but just for those that may be listening that are kind of like me, that are sort of literalists, they sort of want to know where are things. Who, when we're operating software or data that is in the cloud, physically, where is that probably? Where are the big server farms? Who has these?
So, Eddie, that's a great question. You know, most of the time, people think cloud, I mean, it's somewhere out there. But where is it, right? So most of the vendors, there are multiple vendors who are the big player in the cloud. One of the biggest player in the cloud, actually, who I would say one of the pioneer was Amazon Web Services.
Right.
They actually
right.
pioneered into putting all this layer of computing into on-demand model. So Amazon is one of the biggest player. Microsoft has an Azure. Rackspace is another one of the biggest player in this market. But those guys do actually have a farm. They have a big data centers. They have a disaster recovery. They have a multiple data centers running across the globe to fulfill those computing needs. So those are the players. But yeah, some you don't own the hardware. That piece is taken away by the cloud vendor.
Dharmesh, the term that we hear sometimes is SaaS, which, I mean, as you know, it is software as a service, which is what. But what? How? Tell us how that relates to the cloud.
So, Eddie, software, yeah, as what you said, software as a service is a term where you actually do not own or technically do not
right.
own the software. You actually have the right to use that software. So that's a broader term, software as a services and cloud. One of the primary objective, but that's not the only objective, but that's one of the primary objective of cloud is to offer software as a services, and that's what the primary focus is. But then if I can add on, cloud also gives you a platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, so your hardware, as I said, can shrink and grow based on your demand. So that's not anything static. It depends on your demand and how much you want to use it. Similar to, I would say something like it's similar to an electric bill, what you pay every month. The more you use, the more you pay, and the less you use, the less you pay. So,
Dermis, in about a minute and a half here, and we can continue this after the break. But when you go into a small business like ours or like any other small business, what are the problems that you just typically look at regarding their technology?
Eddie, one of the biggest thing when I'm called into a small business, I find it they don't have a strategic plan for adoption of different technologies. There are various technologies what they have to look basic from computing to cloud computing, mobile, social media, even big data analytics. There's not a strategic thought process on what is their vision, what are the technologies that can help them to get to their vision. Right. They are always on a catch-up. They do certain business. They want to do something. They want to do something more efficient. They go and buy a software and start doing it. So that's kind of thing where I'm realizing that small business, they don't have a skills. They don't even have they don't have an adequate knowledge to look upon technology as a strategic and competitive tool to distinguish themselves. You know, so those are the major things when I go and look into small companies. That's where I feel most of the time they don't enough have understand the technology, and even if they understand, there's not a strategic method to implement technologies.
I think you're right. I think the other thing that most of us, you know, as you'd mentioned earlier, we spend our time, and quite rightly so, doing what our core business is, which, and for many of us, you know, maybe you're a computer business, and if you are, that's fine, but if you're not a computer business, and we're not, well, then any time we're spending messing around with computers is time we're not spending on our main business to make money with, so it's a huge cost, and I've actually found, you know, Abdu, our general manager, and we've had situations where Abdu and I have had to spend 2 days straightening out some minor little problem with our network. Well, that's a huge cost to the company when you've got the two top guys there spending 2 days cleaning up a problem because we have outdated software or something like that, and the drivers aren't working with it anymore. Lots more to talk with Dharmesh about. Again, you can find his website at medhtech.com. They'll also be on eddiemayfield.com. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. More to come. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're talking with Dharmesh Vora about technology, about business, and we've been discussing the cloud, although technology in the business, as all of you know, goes way beyond the cloud. Dharmesh, just to reemphasize something that you began talking about, and I was talking about a little bit, the idea of the efficiency of, and we're not trying to talk everybody into moving things to the cloud, but it's something that certainly people should consider, the efficiency of having your own software versus basically as you put it, a pay-as-you-go situation. Talk to us a little more about that.
So, Eddie, from pay-as-you-go model, here is a couple of things I always tell my client. And I, again, as you said, we are not trying to, or personally, I'm not trying to move everything onto the cloud, and cloud is the buzzword, but that's not mean to or a solution to all our problems. But here is something where I really want to make sure I convey my point to my client is, I look upon cloud as helping me to reduce my cost of ownership. So if I have a solution, if I put that on a cloud, I'm not actually buying a new hardware. I'm not actually buying a new software.
Right.
And buying is one thing, but then you keep up with it. It's altogether a different ball game. So usually it's like if I come to you and say, hey, I have a small building and I need an electricity into this building. So the solution would be, okay, if you need an electricity, let me put up a generator plant, get some fuel and get an electricity out. You don't do that. Nobody does that. They actually call their power company. They call them, we need an electricity, and they pay as they go. So I think that's one point what I really wanted to put it across. Again, as I said, this is not, cloud is not the solution to all your problem, but definitely cloud has a power to switch from pay as you go for your computing needs.
You know, you made a good point. Years ago, I think I've talked to you about this, years ago we had hired a guy to come in and do some software for us. And this was, now this is a long date myself, this was back, all the way back to, we still had some DOS machines running. And so when we put the network in, the first thing we had to do was buy all a bunch of new computers, which is extremely expensive. Of course, then none of the printers worked. We had to get new printers. And you know, we just found ourselves over and over having to buy equipment. And the thing didn't work all that well after we finally did all that. After about $50,000, which is a small company that I didn't have the money to do that with, but we had already spent that. We sort of pulled the plug on that project. But the point you're making, one of the things appealing to me, it does not take that kind of upfront cost these days, does it?
No, it does not.
Hey, a lot of my techie nerd friends, and I don't mean that term disparagingly. I get called that a lot myself, so that's fine. You know, a lot of them, they will say they wish we were all using Linux instead of Windows. Now, I've also heard a lot of people say they're nuts. But tell us just a little bit about that, just for folks that are perhaps not all that familiar with the differences in Linux and Windows and even what that would mean.
So, Eddie, Linux is and I'm pretty much sure all your nerd, including myself, I would like to work more on the Linux side, where we personally think Linux is much more stable, secured platform, and also it's one of the open source platform.
Right.
So it's much more secured and open source. You can make a change to yours if you know what you're doing. You can change your OS and then push it back onto other people to use it. But not just from that perspective, Linux is It really provides or offers lot of centralized tools to manage your network centrally. Whereas Windows, where I found a lot of people, and that's where the success of Windows came in, and they made a very intuitive GUI back when they started getting into this network.
By the way, GUI, for those that don't know, GUI is GUI. That's Graphical User Interface. Dharmesh is used to talking to all these people, know what they're talking about.
Exactly. I'm sorry, Eddie. I should have specified that.
Good.
But yeah, so that's where competitive advantage of Windows were. It's simple, easy to use. But Linux, as I said, is much more stable and secured platform. So most of the techie would recommend, if you know what you're doing, then put your infrastructure on Linux.
Aren't most websites actually hosted on Linux servers these days?
I think most of them are hosted on Linux or some flavor on Linux, things like Unix and there are various vendors who specialize, have their own version of Linux. But yeah, most of them are running on Linux, and the advantage of that, one of the primary advantages, the entire package to run your website is free open source code.
Right.
So anybody can download free and start writing the applications on it.
You know, for instance, our website, emainc.net and eddiemayfield.com, both those websites are actually WordPress-type websites, which will not run on Windows servers. You have to have them on Linux, and because it's all open source.
Exactly.
So that's a great idea. You know, Dharmesh, not to interrupt your train of thought, but you know, when I first got in the computer to use the computers, we were using DOS, and I got very, very, very fast at typing in DOS commands and doing things. And even in our accounting package that we had at that time, it was a DOS accounting package. And then DOS sort of fell out of favor, and you got to where you couldn't, you could hardly buy a DOS computer anymore. Then it went to the early versions of Windows, which slowed everything, in my opinion, way down over what it was doing before. In fact, I think we're just now back to the speed that we were back when we were all running DOS. Now, part of that is, DOS was all text-based, and it was very little storage or memory required or anything to make it operate. But it is kind of silly. It's kind of crazy that we're just now catching back up. Speed-wise, now the problem with DOS, like you said, was you did have to know what you were doing to work it, just like Linux. You had to know what you're doing to type commands in DOS. Some people never did learn how to do that. Are there any times you think that that people should buy? Well, let me ask this question. You write software for a living, so how does a person like me or anybody? How do they decide where to buy off-the-shelf software or to have some genius like you come in and write it for them?
Eddie, I appreciate you putting those kind words for me. And I think that's absolutely a strategic call from what you have to do. And again, as you said earlier, I'm helping you, and we are going through a couple of similar kind of situation at EMA. What should we build, and what should we just get off the shelf? I usually tell my clients, automate and build your own software for the process. That is your competitive advantage. If that's something what you're doing, what your competitor are not doing, I would not buy the off-the-shelf software. But I would buy off-the-shelf software if it's the same thing. It's a monotonous thing, like accounting. I don't see any reason, rhyme, or sense to just develop an accounting software where accounting is a standard process and regulated by a lot of regulation, but it's a standard process, and I would not want my client to write a custom software in that case. So to sum it up, I believe the bill and build or buy depends on what you want and how you want to perceive. If technology is your competitive advantage, then you need to build those software or else get something off the shelf.
You know, I sit here thinking while you're talking, I suppose unless you're an accounting firm, you know, there really is no competitive advantage to your accounting program. You know, all it's going to do is send somebody a bill and keep up when they pay. So there's exactly. No competitor there. But, you know, in our case, where it is very important that we track jobs and we're very responsive to customers and that we know who they are and what they sent us last time, and we can, you know, very quickly respond to problems they've had, and perhaps even by looking at the same problem they had a year ago and say, you know, last time we were there, this is what happened, and perhaps this will be the same, this will be the issue. Those kind of things are very valuable to us from a customer service standpoint. And so, as you know, we find that very important for us as a company in dealing with the technology customers and industrial automation type customers that we deal with, that we're able to respond to them in a good way. And you've been a good help. One of the things I want to talk later on in the program about is how helpful it sometimes is, because we've just been through this, to sit down and actually go through your processes one by one and see, and you're a good coach in this area, and to see, What are you doing? What order are you doing them in? And are you doing redundant things? Are you entering the same data four times? And if you are, why are you doing that? And I think those are interesting things for any small business operator to think about. You're listening to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Dharmesh Vorha. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Let me remind you once again, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We're talking with Dharmesh Vorha about technology issues. Dharmesh is a real expert in this area. Dharmesh, what is your background, and how in the world did you get in this business?
Eddie, my background is I was born and lived most of my life in India, and I'm a computer science graduate. I graduated from a university called University of Mumbai. That's the university in the one of the biggest city in India. That's in Bombay. And as my background, I have been working on IT and IT related things for last 17 years now. I've graduated, like what I said, around 1998, and I've been in the technology field for last 17, 18 years now. So,
and again, go over his website. It's medhtech.com, medhtech.com, if you're trying to spell that out. And again, that will be on eddiemayfield.com. We'll have a link to Dharmesh. Dharmesh, just tell us in a quick word here, what does your company do? What do you guys do?
So, Eddie, let me just go back to the first question. I don't think I answered why I got into the business.
Yeah.
That's kind of the core on why. I mean, I when I landed up here, I had a good job. I think I had a decent career, and I was on track to a decent career. But getting into the business was my passion. One of the things I realized when I moved to America was, it's a land of opportunities. It's a capitalist economy. It's a land of opportunities. You can, the opportunities are limitless. And my passion has always been to help and solve problems. So that actually got me started to think about, hey, can I have something around for myself, which I provide services on IT technology, not just technologies, but consulting, product development, and that's how I got into the business. And my business, actually, we are primarily into consulting. We are primarily into helping small business develop enterprise software. One of the few things what we have been recently hammered with is app development. That's one of the things what we do. We develop custom apps on any kind of mobile platform, Android, iOS platform. And also, I have a small CRM product that I implement in small business that helps them track their sales and sales cycle and sales management team. So primarily, I'm focused on, as I said, on technology solutions and technology consulting.
Well, I can attest that you're very good at doing that. You know, you're, as I mentioned earlier, you're doing a project for us at EMA right now. And one of the things, Darmesh, that we've noted, and you and I have discussed this, is it's really very good and very eye-opening to sit down and go over how we do things. Okay, how does our processes work? And, you know, I remember when you were with us and we would, like, draw diagrams. Okay, we do this, we do this, we do that. And you're saying, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing that? And so you move that, you know, because you found redundancies. Is that a typical experience for you with companies?
Yes, Eddie. As I said earlier, also one of the hardest thing, and for any small business or even with big business, I have a client. I have a big local retail client where I do consulting. Most of the time, we realize when we go into and look for any solutions is I believe people have been doing certain things certain way, and that's all they know of.
Right.
But when you call somebody like me or my team, and we just sit down with you guys, go over your process, make you think hard. Is that what we do? Why we are doing what we are doing? And is that the right place to do these things? You know, so those kind of things are pretty normal. Most of the time, I actually come out after this kind of sessions. I actually come out doing something else, which was totally different than what I was called in for. But I believe this is similar anywhere where I go. As I said, people have to look down at their process, and when they call in somebody like me, they actually get time to sit down and think about it.
I would really encourage any business to sit down and look at how you do things, even things, and it forces you, again, to take a new look at it. It's very cathartic to do that, where you really do learn how to why you're doing things the way that you're doing. Hey, Darwin, let's just talk a minute about security, because that's when you talk about putting things on the cloud, people immediately say, well, heck, you're giving a third party control of our data. Talk to us about that.
Exactly. Eddie, I think security is one of the biggest concerns. When I was talking about all the good things about cloud, security will be one of the biggest things. And I don't think so it's one of the biggest thing. I think it's the biggest hindrance in
right.
The adoption of cloud. Everybody is a little bit not scared, but concerned about putting their data into somebody else. They don't know what they're doing or how they're going to do and what they will do with their data. But I still believe, even that being said, there are a lot of security policies and procedures and plan in place. You can work out with your vendor. You can review the plans. You can understand what you're going to do with your data. But I honestly don't believe that security would stop anything going on to the cloud. You got to look at your sensitive data. You got to look into your SLA with your vendor and see how it's been accessed, how it's been shared, and you need to be top of those kind of situations. But again, Eddie, on the flip side, I believe you are more prone to those security problems when you host things
yeah.
into your network.
Right,
when
I think
you
so,
don't
too.
Even spell security. Most of
right.
you, most of the small business cannot even know what security challenges they face. I would rather prefer that somebody as a cloud vendor who has security specialist handle my data.
Yeah, again, you're talking people like Amazon, Microsoft, people like that who are pretty geared up on this, a lot more than your average small company. You know, a long time ago, I had a lady I was talking to, and she said, well, you know, this was back when we all began buying things by credit card on the internet. She said, you know, I'm just not going to put my credit card on the internet. And I use this example. So, you know, you're in a restaurant and you eat dinner, and then you give the waiter your credit card, and he walks out of your sight for 10 minutes with that card. There's nothing more insecure than that. I mean,
exactly.
The guy could be doing anything with your card. You have no idea. So at least the web is no more insecure than that.
Exactly. And that's where I think I was trying to put my point across. It's better to be, I would rather trust, or I would rather work with vendor who have special, and most of these big vendors do have security specialists in their team.
Ramesh, I'm interested in your opinion on companies like LifeLock and people like that, the identity protection type services.
LifeLock, Eddie, I've been looking at LifeLock for a couple of years, and I think
There are other people like them. So, but I'm just that whole genre of sort of identity protection. Do you place any faith in that?
Eddie, I would absolutely. I think if I'm having a sensitive data, if my identity is critical to me, I do put faith into any kind of LifeLock.
Okay.
Just one example. But here is what I look upon. If not LifeLock, I mean, if not those identity theft program, you can do all that stuff by yourself. It is not that rocket science what those guys or those program does. But when you actually start doing those things, it requires a lot of time and effort on your end. So I would rather work with, if you are a company which has a liability, you are running on a lot of liabilities, I would rather work or look at a lot of different identity theft program. And they do, I'm pretty much sure they do what they absolutely they offer.
Well, I use them, and occasionally you every now and then you get an alert that says, hey, we found your name on some list somewhere and blah blah blah, you know. So I mean, it's good to I think it's worthwhile too. I don't think anything's perfect. I know that predicting the future is difficult for any of us, but this whole security thing and the cloud is the whole idea of cloud. The cloud grows and everything. What do you anticipate? Because it seems like a security could be a real killer here if people keep reading about data breaches and things like that.
Exactly. Eddie, I think the way we are moving, and one of the important data point I was reading, I think sometime last week, was there would be 50 billion connected devices by 2020. So what it actually means, and let me, maybe I can step back a little bit for your listeners, is things are getting connected. It's not just a dumb terminal or a computer connecting it to the server. Everything will talk to every other thing, every other devices. There are, and that trend is already started. I'm not talking about future. We are already there. There are smart thermostats out there, and I'm sure there are people are working on smart car. You have a lot of mobile devices. They do different things. Smart watches. Apple is coming up. Apple just now announced a smart watch, and Apple is not the first one to get into smart watch. There have been smart watch around before that. So the point what I was trying to make is things will get connected. Security would be at the center of all this technology adoption, but where I want to make sure your listeners understand is there are a secure way of connecting these devices. There are industry standards to develop app, to communicate, to share the data between these devices, and I think on the long term, every innovation comes with its flip side. Security would be the flip side, but I don't believe security, as I said, would not be a major hindrance in the adoption of these technologies. But again, we have to be concerned. We have to have a strategy. We have to have a plan around the securities and our concerns. But it's how the world would be. I mean, I don't know how else should I put it across.
You know, I was thinking while you were talking, you know, back when the ideas of banks first came out and people started putting their money in banks, there were people robbing banks back in those days. It happened every now and then.
Exactly. And you know, now there is a bank without any branches.
Right.
They're all electronic.
Right. And occasionally somebody robs it. But the companies, you know, at least the credit card companies, you know, they really have developed very good algorithms these days to spot fraud. I know we've had a few cases in our company where you'll get a call and say, hey, were you buying something in Sweden? We said, no, we weren't. No, they catch your card, and then they're liable for it, not you. One more segment to go with Darnesh. Just do hang around. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. We're talking with Dharmesh Vora. You can find him, by the way, at medhtech.com. And again, there'll be a link to that on eddiemayfield.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. Dharmesh, just out of curiosity, what recent app or innovation impresses a guy like you?
Eddie, I think from technology perspective, we are at a time where there would be lot of disruption, basic disruptions in things, how we do and how we're going to live life in next couple of years. So one of the, from innovation perspective, I don't know if your listeners are aware, or one of the thing I like are something called as a beacons. You know, people are developing a beacon. A beacon is a physical device that will be in your retail store or that would be in your home that actually talks to the app or that's installed on your mobile phone and track you, not you as a person, not your personal data, but would track your movements on how you're using certain things. One of the things I was looking at, being, as I said earlier, we do retail consulting. One of the things we are looking at is how can we bring the computing to a physical store. They have a challenge in competing with the online stores.
Right.
They don't have a good way to track how many customers shows up, where they are, if they show up, what part of their store they are most likely spending their time, if they brought something, if they didn't buy it, why they didn't buy it. So those kind of beacons, I'm impressed with the whole thing about changing that shopping experience. We at MedTech are really looking close on how do we adapt, how do we help our client to adapt to technologies like those.
Well, you guys do a great job on that. You know, I read a book recently by a guy called Patrick Tucker called The Naked Future, and he talks in there about the idea that our lives are becoming more and more and more transparent. And he makes an interesting point, because we can bemoan that and say, oh, that's terrible, it's terrible. His point is, look, technology rarely goes back in the box. So you either embrace it or you run from it, but you can't run very far from it. But his attitude, and that's his whole attitude, is that, yes, we live in a much more transparent world than we used to live in, but get used to it. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about this?
Eddie, I think I would go back and hit on what you had said earlier. I mean, I know for sure there are people, hey, we are not going to ever get on credit card. We are not going to use credit card, but we're going to write checks. We're going to keep on writing checks so that nobody can get into our credit card information. I don't think that thought process is relevant now. People use credit cards. So
right.
I think I agree to Patrick Tucker, and I totally agree with where things are. I'm the kind of guy, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon, but I'm going to make sure I have all the processes, I have all my concerns covered before I get onto new technology. But yeah, you have to embrace technology. Technology improves your life. Technology makes your life efficient, and it connects people. So absolutely, you have to adapt to technology.
Hey, Dharmesh, what are your thoughts on social media, like Facebook and Twitter, things like that?
Eddie, Facebook, and I just not want to narrow it down to the Facebook, but the whole social media has changed how we human interact with each other.
Yeah. Better or worse, it has.
How do we perceive things? And from a small business perspective, I really want your listeners to understand what it has actually changed. It has changed marketing from an outbound mechanism where you talk to your customer without knowing their interest, without knowing where they are in terms of buying your product or services. You just do an outbound communication and just go to your customer based on what you think is the right time to approach them. But now with social media, one of the important change, what it brings for a small business in their marketing effort, it has become an inbound. So actually you get a reference when people talk about you, your brand on the Facebook. You are not just communicating to your customer. Some people else is communicating to them about you, and
yep,
that brings in more business, and that adds more authentic value to your products and services, what you're offering them. So I think social media, that's one of the major things from social media perspective. They let you in a small business go to a customer, a targeted customer. One of the things which I missed to spell it out was you can actually target your customer. You can go to a, you can analyze your customer base and just reach out to those guys or that section of a customer to reach out, and your chances of getting a sale converted are higher if you are, if you know your target customer and if you can reach out to them with a specific message.
You know, you're right, and I was sitting here thinking, well, you know, we've with some friends, we booked a we were getting a hotel up in Nashville to take a trip up there with some folks, and one of the ladies booked a hotel for us. Well, the first thing I did was go at a couple of sites and look, see what are people saying about that hotel. And, boy, I'll tell you, this day and age, if you're not doing a good job and you're serving your public like that, you're going to be in trouble, because, I mean, people are going to absolutely, like you said, it's not just you talking to your customers. Other people are talking to your customers saying, hey, this place is no good, or it's great, or whatever the message is, but you have to really be aware of that. I think these days, and instead of just getting mad at somebody that says something bad about your company, you better deal with it.
Exactly, and then there are ways to deal with it. There is a way. There has to be a plan around it. And Eddie, where I feel small businesses, I don't think so. As I said, that I don't think most of them understand every social media is not meant to send every message
right
to every segmented customer. We at MedTech provide help. We do provide strategy for our small business to reach out to the customer and how to use different platform. You know, I know we didn't talk about different platform, but different platform are meant to convey different message at different times.
Right.
You know, so we come up with a strategy. We come up with a plan to see how they can approach their customers.
Hey, You are a technology person and a consultant and all that, but you're also a small business person. And I'm just curious, with that hat on for a moment, talk to us about the importance of customer service, because you serve clients.
Yes, sir. And Eddie, from my perspective, here is what, when I started my business, one of the things I realized, I was looking at Zappos, and I'm sure if you would know Zappos.com.
Right.
So Zappos, when I was looking at Zappos before they got bought by Amazon, one niche what they had was they were selling shoes. There were a lot of people selling shoes, but the thing they made distinguish is the customer service. Customer service for me is the critical, is the pillar of my business. And Eddie, where I look at customer service, for me, customer service is not just asking, just doing what my customer wants. For me, it goes a little beyond. For me, it's about listening to your customer. Most right. of the time, I find people are just listening for it to respond to their customer needs. And I hope when we are at EMA talking to you, we actually try to hear you. We actually try to see where your problems are, and provide you a solution which is more efficient. And for me, that's the value I add to my customer, and that's where I wanted to be, MedTech to be focused at.
You know, that's a great way to put that. And by the way, you are very good at it. You're a very good listener, and you help you sort of guide discussions and a very good listener. You know, we've interviewed several people here on Driven to Business about customer service, and almost all of them say the same thing. It's number one, it's listening, and number two, it's caring. You didn't mention that, but that's actually some of the bottom lines. You have to care about what your customers think about things, and you really want to help them resolve problems. And once people know that, I think you know, that's where those social media platforms where people start saying nice things about you kick in, and all of a sudden you start getting business out of that because of the fact that you did a good job. And you can't, you know, I think some people try to do marketing without doing a good job, and those things don't work. I mean, at least not very long. You can't get away with it. Dermot's been a great guest. Thank you for being on the program today. I know you're a busy person.
Eddie, I appreciate you calling me here, and it was nice talking to you.
All right, you've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.